welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, it is now or never. I mean, folks, go look at the clock and you'll see that Mickey's big hand is pointing to no time. We have no time to wait. We have to take action. As a matter of fact, if you aren't watching what's going on, because I really don't care too much to be consumed by it, but with these primaries and these elections, what makes you think things got better under the Biden administration? And what makes you think that the states have actually done those things that they should have done, before the Trump election? The fact is that the entire uniparty is moving forward in ensuring that the elections go the way they need them to go. Did you hear the uniparty? When I say the uniparty, that means the Republican establishment as well as the Democrats. And, you know, the Republicans may be out in public screaming and crying, but they're doing nothing. And this is actually really evident when you start looking at the state party apparatuses. I mean, it's very evident in Washington State. It's very evident in a lot of the states. People, you know, just come right out and say, these guys are communists. Why? How did they even get in charge? How did they even get elected? It's because, believe it or not, folks, the people that are operating in the Republican Party are actually communist operatives. I mean, they penetrated our government a long time ago. So when we look over our shoulder and we look at the federal court system, do not think that, oh, well, they're going to do the right thing. Now, we need to go into the court system, you know, such as this lawsuit over the January 6th action of Congress and why we're suing. We need to prove to you that the court has no concern with the Constitution. The language is very clear when it comes to the Electoral College. You know, actually, if the court was really going to do its job, it would basically say that the entire election process is wrong. Congress needs to basically backhand the states and tell the states, you can't allow the party to control these elections. Comply to the Constitution. What you must do is you must actually have the voters vote for their electors. It's that simple, folks. The fact is that parties can't even get ballot access because the two-party system has full control. You know, I'm telling you, folks, if you can't recognize what the two parties have done and how they've really locked you into this corner and why we're so trapped, even with our legal system, the only way out of this mess is by, you know, the first step in a marathon is the hardest step. The first step in getting out of this plastic bag is throwing the punch. And that first punch that we have to punch or throw is actually a First Amendment petition. And it's not just one. We got to keep on punching and keep on punching because, folks, I'm telling you right now, even though it may seem like it's insurmountable, we're really punching our way out of a paper sack, and it is a wet paper sack. So once you start throwing punches, you know, you may not get out of the sack with the first punch because, you know, you're a big person, right? And you're in a big bag. And so that bag, there's room and so forth. And so to get completely out, you're going to have to, you know, tear or punch and kick and do a few things. But I'm going to tell you, it's a lot easier than you think. It is a wet paper bag. And all the whole point of these First Amendment petitions is actually proving to the constituents in your area that we actually have a mechanism of holding government accountable and demanding and getting transparency. Because if we can't get it, see, I talk to people all the time and they go, okay, so what? They're ignoring your First Amendment petitions. Aristotle pointed out in his book Politics, and I cite this all the time, that there are two reasons why people revolt. And if you look at a revolt, I'm not talking about picking up arms type of a revolt. When people actually get involved, they take a stand and they make a change. And in America, that's all we really need to do, is we just need to make a change. We need to start voting out all of these establishments. This is why I'm working overtime in helping as many campaigns as I am, in helping people understand how to take that stand and how to start leading. And I'm telling you, the punches that you have, that you can throw at every public servant right now, you don't even need to have an organization. Your organization will form by you punching. In other words, by you being a vigilant citizen and going out. I had a conversation. It's Feedback Friday. So I actually had a conversation yesterday with I'm not going to mention the name because I didn't tell the individual that I was going to say this. But I talked to an individual because there's a few individuals that have been out and actually have gotten, you know, their signature sheets signed for this first petition that we have. And so in so doing, what we have done is, you know, done some feedback. So he actually has the first signature sheet completely filled out. So my first question I asked was, how many people didn't sign? Anybody refused to sign? What was the sentiment? What was the percentage? You know, basically, it was just a little less than 30. I think it was like 28 or whatever in the first line or that first sheet. And he came back and told me, well, there was only one couple that didn't sign, and they didn't sign because they were looking for more information. They wanted to know, you know, more details about this. And I go, okay, so it wasn't really an ideological bent. Oh, no, you know, Biden's a great – nothing like that. They weren't in support of Biden. They just wanted to do the due diligence. And I go, okay, so that – you don't know. That could be a smart lawyer progressive that basically doesn't want to out themselves in a very conservative neighborhood. But the fact is that he had almost 100% of the people that he engaged signed that petition, almost 100%. Now, when I asked him how many people have, after signing that petition, said, this is important, this is great, what can I do? And right now, it's looking like 10%. He's getting about 10% people on their own saying, what can I do? Folks, I'm telling you, the people out there, and sometimes, you know, people may actually, you know, jump in and say, you know, what can I do? But there's a lot of people there that... There are a lot of people that you will approach. There's a lot of people he dealt with that had he planted the seed, you know, we really need your help. We don't need a lot, but we just need a little bit of help from everybody. If everybody put their hand on this big rock, we could all lift this thing. And everybody else understands that principle. Everybody understands that, you know, heavy lifting requires more manpower. Heavy lifting does require something. But if you make it and you place context to it to say, you know, we're not asking you to change your life. We're not asking you to not go to work. We're just asking to, you know, give us a little help. You know, take a signature sheet. Go get some signatures for us. Go do something. But 9 times out of 10, folks, once you get that person engaged, all of a sudden you can have a fanatic. And it's awesome. It's an awesome thing to watch how one person really goes through this conversion of an apathetic, you know, all is lost, no hope person to a person that's actually now they're standing in the middle of a boxing ring throwing punches. That is how transforming the truth can be. Because when people realize they're standing on the truth, then, you know, they feel, you know, what's that word, invulnerable? They just feel... you know, the typically youth, indestructible. That's what I wanted to use. Indestructible. They just feel indestructible. Just like your typical teenagers. You know, that's why kids get drunk and they stand up on cars and go car surfing while the cars travel at 60 miles an hour. I mean, really? Are they that stupid? So anyway, as we started getting this feedback, I go, this is just awesome. So I'm hoping that we get some more feedback from a few more people that have actually got signatures out. Folks, where are you with your signatures? It is out there. We're going to actually be updating the petition, and we're going to be adding some teeth to the petition, but we're not changing the context or the substance of this petition. So that'll be happening hopefully this weekend, and hopefully this weekend I will get the other two petitions done. We need these done. It is election season, and we need your help in getting more of these petitions written and done. So if you need a 101 class, you know, a basic class on how to write a petition, then when we're all done with all of this, maybe that's what we'll do before we go into the ratification debates, because we do need your help. And so when we go into the ratification debates, we're going to maintain Feedback Friday, even though while I'm covering and broadcasting the ratification debates, it won't actually allude to the fact that we're still doing Feedback Friday, but that's just because I'm re-airing the broadcast we did last time. And that's just because it was a good broadcast and it got into a lot of detail. It gave you all the details you need. And so what this will do is it'll free me up to actually be able to work more with. And I'm telling you, if you have not heard or if you have heard the ratification debates, it's like a fire hose. You know, most people, they have to hear them a few times before they go, wow, I didn't realize how much detail is in these things. Folks, you need to spread the word. You need to get people to start learning the facts about their Constitution and of the facts regarding how that Constitution was defined, its terms, definitions, because that's exactly what the ratification debates are. So when we come back after these two promos, we'll kind of just go through a few things, and then we're going to dive into content because we need to get this Bill of Rights or this comprehensive positions done. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's go through the obligatories. As you know, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and those of you who try to go to republicreview.org will find that that domain is not available. There's a reason for that. That org is reserved for the states when the state's ready to, you know, get that stood up and operating. It is for them. They're going to own that. GR does not own Republic Review. And so this whole concept of this effort is something that is well within the Constitution. And when people go, yeah, it's not in there. Actually, it is. It's right there in Article 7, because that's why Article 7 is so important. But I'm not going to go down that rat hole. We go through this when we go through the Constitution. So if you ready to go through the Constitution now. You got to wait because we actually do that on September 17th because that's Constitution Day and week. Anyway, we also want to promote Timber Nation. We want you to actually go, if you're looking for hardwood furnishings, check them out, especially if you're looking for, you know, some special piece of furniture, some filling some void, or something that you need new functionality, something that's both functional and attractive, you know, not just, you know, eye candy, but something that actually works, but is still beautiful. Anyway, I love my desk that I got from them, and I love our entertainment system that we got from them. We're going to end up having to replace it. We actually had a custom entertainment system for our, you know, family room. We had that built, I'm going to say, 10 years ago. And unfortunately, it was made with medium-density fiberboard. I think it's a, I think the brand on it is Salamander or something like that. But anyway, we called them up and we had them do a custom build for us for a unique configuration. And anyway, because it was made of that medium-density fiberboard, because we have bulldogs, you know, they chewed on it, and it just, even if that was, if, you know, because that was particle board or medium-density fiberboard, because it's hard for people to tell the difference. So you just look at it as particle board. And, but there's a sonic difference between them. But anyway, what reason I'm telling you this is that if that would have been solid oak or solid walnut, it would have been so easy to repair. As a matter of fact, you know, we could look at it and go, well, why repair it? I mean, it adds a little character. It's now distressed in the corner. But, you know, when they, when a dog gets down to the flaky, you know, particle board stuff, it just, it looks junky. It looks like it came from China. And so we don't have to accept MIC anymore, right? We do not have to use MIC anymore. What is MIC? Made in China. So when you start looking at stuff and you go, hey, that's MIC, you know, throw that crap away. Do yourself a favor. Start buying American, timbernation.com. And add local. If you're getting involved, if you have a campaign, if you're ready to start doing your campaign, I'm telling people right now, with all of the stuff we're going through, this is a two-year strategy. If you want to win and win big, this is how you do it, by taking a two-year strategy, by starting to attack your county commissioners and holding them accountable. And holding them accountable in every way. So you want to go through every single one of these petitions to just prove to the folks in your community that your county commissioners are not doing their job. What you may want to do is you may want to just kind of filter in some of these things, and you want to wait for the big blows to come in, you know, when you get closer to the campaign. But what's important is in this entire process, why are First Amendment petitions such a valuable tool? Because one thing it does is it teaches people about the First Amendment petition. The second thing it does is it teaches them about the Constitution and what the public servants should be doing, that nobody realizes, wow, I didn't know that they were supposed to do that. I didn't know they had these obligations. So anyway, I do have to give you fair warning. Maggie is on the loose, and she is kind of wandering around. So you may hear her barking outside, but that doesn't mean she's in distress or she's being harmed in any way, okay? So, anywho, let me just move into this content, because as we talked about, and we've been going through all of these different positions to campaign on, these are the constitutional positions that everybody needs to be campaigning on. If they're campaigning on these positions, then they're campaigning on the Constitution. And so what we just wrapped up, what we were just literally hitting, was the Equal Footing Clause. And we actually just went through the Equal Footing Clause yesterday. And so the final comments, and I have to state this over and over again, the federal government cannot create a condition with a state's sovereignty that actually prejudices any claim of that particular state. In other words, they should have the exact same level of equality. They should have the exact same sovereignty as every other state. And more importantly, the federal government must operate within its enumerated powers. It cannot exercise power that has not been formally given. If it does, It is actually exercising tyranny. So the petitions, we have two petitions that kind of cover this. The first petition is challenging the authority. So basically we're going to write a petition that basically says, where is the authority in the Constitution for Congress to reduce or restrain a state's sovereignty in the admission process of a state? The Uniformity Clause requires that all states must be treated equally without disparity. Article 4, Section 3 restricts the federal government from being able to take any action that would prejudice the claim of any state or all of the states. All initial states were declared equal in every way. To deviate from this course would require an amendment. Therefore, each state legislature needs, so this would be a separate petition right here. So each state legislature would need to, I'm trying to do two things at once and I shouldn't have done that. So each state legislature needs to declare that itself is a full sovereign state. In other words, they actually have to come right out and say, we are a full sovereign state, that the federal government did not have the authority to take away our land, our resources, or to take away any scintilla of our sovereignty. We possess the exact same sovereignty as all states in this union. Next thing they need to do within this one petition, because this petition has to have two things. It's a declaration that the state is fully sovereign and it does not recognize the federal government's marginalizing its sovereignty. And then secondly, it has to basically declare and acknowledge that all states are equal in the same capacity. In so doing, this actually helps bolster and helps actually motivate other states like Oklahoma that has been operating with its hands and feet tied along with a blindfold and a gag in its mouth. I mean, out of all of the states, it seems to be so heavily hindered. Oklahoma, I just can't believe, you know, the crap that the federal government has done to them. And I live in Washington State, which is heavily, you know, usurp powers on forests and so forth. Folks, the federal government has been manipulating and managing and operating so far outside the Constitution for so long, everybody's head is spinning. It's time we get our feet well planted and actually start, you know, like I said, we just have to start basically taking swings. And when you throw that first swing with these First Amendment petitions, this will help people realize, wow. Because I'm going to tell you, we get people to sign these things, people are going to actually learn. They're going to learn things that they didn't know, and there's nothing they can challenge. Now, I will say this, you have to be wary, and you have to let them know that courts do not have the option to redefine something that was defined in the original negotiations of the compact. So in other words, when a court justice comes along and says, well, we believe it's this, well, that means that they're just ignoring how it was absolutely defined in the contractual process. Because when John Marshall says that they can't, you know, that the court will not recognize any law that is not within the jurisdiction or the enumerated powers of the Constitution, then that's what the court is supposed to do. Because that was a definition provided during the ratification debates. In other words, when they accepted the Constitution in the ratification debates, that term was a part of the process of them accepting it. And if you understand the fundamental tenets of contract law, then clearly, as they stipulated what these things meant, those become legally binding. There's really nothing that can be perverted about this. And so when people go, well, you know, I see, you know, the merits of Republican View, I see the merits of all of these things you're saying, but, you know, these things can easily be derailed. No, they can't. When you definitize it, boom, you are done. That is the, you basically boil it down, you distill it down to the bedrock. You know, that is the foundation. There's no way around that. That is how it is set. That is how it's defined. That's exactly what it means. So when a judge or a lawyer comes along and tries to, I'll just say, worm tongue you or soothsay you or, you know, speak with a forked tongue, I think you get my point, then we start seeing that we're dealing with an evil person that has no compunction and no care in the world about the truth. They're only trying to manage their agenda and their controls. And that means that they're dangerous and we can't trust them. So with that, let's just go into this last petition. Well, we're going into a break first. But we have a 49th petition. And oh, by the way, as I've been going through this, this really started, I have to go back and check. I think this started with about four, maybe six pages at the most. We're now on almost 30 pages of, and what I'm doing is I'm just providing all of these details and petitions on all of these different issues. But it was basically about 4 pages of issues in bullet format. We'll be right back.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
You know, one of the things I'm not going to get into as far as petitions, by the way, out of this entire list, you'll notice that I won't have anything regarding the Second Amendment. I won't have anything regarding health freedom and a lot of these myopic issues like abortion. Because I know there's groups out there, folks, that they should be leading on these First Amendment petitions. So you offer them or you approach them and say, you know, we're doing all these petitions. And as a subject matter expert, we'd love to have you do a petition to hold our county commissioner and explain the strategy. This is how you get them on board. This is how you get them to actually become a part of the solution instead of being a part of the problem. Now, nobody ever thinks that when they go off and, you know, they're out there supporting the Second Amendment that they would say, oh, I'm a part of the problem. They would deny that, and actually they would take offense. And I understand that. But bottom line, they are a part of the problem because they're trying to make the problem about something downstream. It's a downstream view instead of the upstream view. In other words, when it comes down to this whole concept of the Second Amendment, we have to look at the fact that, hold on, who has the authority to execute the laws of the Union? Oh, that's the militia. So why is it that the federal government even has any of these enforcement agencies? Why is it that they're the ones that are carrying the guns when it's we the people in that Constitution that has been designed and designated in the framework of the checks and balances of this constitutional republic? It is the people's responsibility to enforce the laws of the union. Do you understand what I just said? Which means the Second Amendment is actually even more powerful and more important because of the militia, that first clause in the Second Amendment. Most people just focus on the right to, you know, bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, hold on here. Why is it that we're supposed to have these arms? Because it is our responsibility to ensure that all laws are constitutional. What does that mean? What that means is that the federal government came along and created a law, and then they said, hey, go enforce this. Well, there's a good likelihood that we wouldn't if it is tyrannical or not constitutional. So placing context of that, my friends, what that means is that when we look at the federal government creating their own enforcement agency, now they have a mechanism to enforce unconstitutional laws, which means that they have the ability to become the judge, jury, and executioner. When we have checks and balances within this system that the good Lord gave us, I don't even think the framers understood this principle. To ensure that we had such a symbiotic relationship and the ability to have such oversight to all of these different degrees is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. I mean, I am in awe of this design because it has taken me a long time to look at this from such different views at a macro view. I'm telling you, not a single macro view, but in looking at it in different ways at a macro view, I am just in awe at the design of our constitutional republic. So anyway, the last one, I believe. So the last one is the ability of the general government to possess land. So this is the last petition. We have to challenge. And what we do is we're going to the county commissioners. All these go to the county commissioners, and we're going to challenge the ability of the general government to possess land and resources for direct wealth and control, which was viewed unacceptable. We're going to prove this. This is why the ability for the federal government to regulate territories was included under the responsibility of Congress to admit new states into this union. This is not a power. It is a responsibility, ensuring that the union would grow with new parties coming into the union, being able to help keep the federal government in check. All federal property must be challenged to determine if each of these pieces of property serves the union's strategic needs for security or ports, such as a port of entry, or for the receipt of commerce, for people, and so forth. So in other words, one of the properties and each property that we would be looking at would be like a military installation. Is it a fort, magazine, an arsenal? And here's the question, folks. This is the question. You have to actually ask the question, how is this magazine, where it is sitting, you know, serving us in our strategic design? And I am here to tell you that there better be a good answer for it. I believe that when we look at military and some of these, you know, posts and some of these bombing ranges and so forth, they don't need a huge bombing range in every state. They have bombing ranges in New Mexico. They have bombing ranges in Oklahoma, artillery ranges. I mean, if you look at most all the Western states, that's where they have all these bombing ranges. They have several bombing ranges in California, Texas. Folks, why is it that they're using that much land and restraining the states from being able to go in and actually make that land usable again and actually make that available for resources, for revenue purposes, or what have you? They are literally strangling the states by taking and possessing so much land for purposes that are unnecessary. In other words, the duplication of having all of these different bombing ranges. I can understand if there's good justifiable reason, but you can't justify every single one. There has to be some reductions in some of these military training facilities and so forth. It's just the same thing as, like, you know, mountain cold warfare and so forth, or SEER schools and so forth. I think there's merit in having a variety, but it's not to the degree that we have to have as many. Now, I know that the Graham Rudman Act was an act that actually kind of forced, and BRAC was another one that forced consolidations of the military. I'm an advocate of actually consolidating all of the military into the U.S. Armed Forces, actually into the Department of the Navy, because only the Navy is authorized to exist as a national security force. And so I believe that if we're going to have an army, if we're going to have, you know, a role for armed forces, or, you know, people to be on the ground in Germany because of status forces or what have you, or these agreements, post-war agreements, then, you know, we need to reevaluate all of those. But we do have a responsibility, folks. Do not believe what the polls are telling you. America has a responsibility to ensure our commerce is flowing freely. We have that responsibility to ensure that we aren't, you know, encumbered by pirates and what have you. But we're not supposed to actually be providing that for all of the world. We should actually be, you know, because if the world isn't helping fund the keeping the shipping lanes open, then they should actually have to pay for, you know, or take the risk on themselves if they're going to move commerce, if they fly their flag, then they take that risk of a pirate actually seizing their ships and doing something that they don't want to be done, stealing their ship, their commerce, so forth and so on. So when we start really looking at how to do this business, it's not that hard. This isn't that difficult. And it actually meets our constitutional standings, because it was Thomas Jefferson that basically injected himself, his administration injected America into the Mediterranean when the Mohammedans of the Ottoman Empire were trying to hinder the flow of commerce coming to America. And he said, no way, you're not going to do that. We have a right to, you know, flow our commerce, and we're not paying tribute. And so that was the beginning of America taking a stand to, you know, thugs and bullies and so forth. We have a right to allow our commerce to go in and out of the ports that we have trade agreements with. And anybody on the high seas that wants to actually say you can't do that, they will have to deal with, you know, the wrath of the United States. But any other country, it's not ours to do for them. So bottom line, they should be helping flip this bill, if you understand what I'm saying. And it shouldn't be a bill to the UN. It should be a bill to the United States. Again, we have a petition that's going out directly that will actually affect, you know, our involvement in the UN and all of these other subjugates. And so you'll actually be seeing that petition next week. I was hoping that I'd have it done by today. My apologies. I didn't realize I'd be in so many different issues, but it's all good. It's all good because I've had some great conversations. We've made some good headway with some organizations and so forth. Anyway, going back to this whole property being challenged, we have to challenge the veracity and, you know, the reasoning to the strategies for the military installations, for these ports of entry, for anything that the federal government needs for needful buildings. If there's any property, any building, anything within your state that has a federal claim to it, it needs to be challenged, and it needs to be directly associated to an enumerated role, responsibility, or power that is enumerated, or even an enumerated property. If it's not enumerated as a property, now needful buildings is ambiguous, but when it comes to property, if it's a property for forestry or environmental protection, sorry, we never delegated that power to the federal government. They have no business taking, seizing, and basically holding these states hostage over property that they don't have a power to do. It's illegitimate, it's fraud, and they're committing economic warfare when they do this. Now, when we come back, we're going to be dealing with the invasion, and we'll try to fly through this. We have a really good video on the Reclaiming the Republic YouTube channel regarding immigration, and all of this information we're going to go through real quick, deals with that, and you can find this video. You need to share this video along with this upcoming petition, because we got a petition on this. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so going into the invasion, Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution clearly states, "The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion." Folks, it is their obligation to protect us from an invasion. All you have to do is say, "We are being invaded," and they should respond. But they're not, and they're not even using this terminology. They're calling this an immigration crisis. They're calling these migrant people. They're refusing to understand that borders exist for a reason, to control who comes in and who comes out. It's interesting because I think it may have been Ronald Reagan who may have made the analogy that when you look at a free nation in contrast to a communist nation, a free nation has the guns pointing outward in protecting its nation. A totalitarian communist nation, the guns on their border are pointing inward to control the people. Now, I ask you, what kind of nation do we have? Do we have a free nation, or do we have a nation that is under siege by its government, who is actually the insurgents against the Constitution and committing rebellion against the Constitution and their own people? America has been under an invasion for well over a century. The concept of an invasion was defined by the framers within the Constitutions and the terms and definitions provided by the framers during the ratification debates on the Constitution. When I say constitutions, I'm talking about, you know, both state and U.S. Constitution. By definition, an invasion is an instance of invading a country or region. It's an incursion by a large number of people, an unwelcome intrusion into another's domain. The framers were so sensitive to subversive activities after the Revolutionary War Continental Congress expelled the British royalists out of America in a plethora of means. The monetary restitution for the loss of property confiscated by the independent states was one of the contested issues in treaty talks with Britain for years and was a driving factor as to why the British never honored the treaty and was constantly harassing and impressing American ships and sailors. I want you to understand, folks, when we go through all of this stuff, I mean, we're trying to give you the macro view here. To be clear, an invasion as the Constitution was being formed included subversive elements walking across the boundaries. You know, I believe I pointed this out to you before, but let's look at New Amsterdam. New Amsterdam in itself was absolutely invaded by the British colonies because it was a Dutch colony that ended up becoming a British colony. Isn't that interesting how we actually use that tactic here in America? So the petitions that we need to get into is demanding an immediate removal of all representatives and senators of Congress who have not called for the deployment of the militia on the southern border. And so we need to move forward with this. And in addition, any and all jurists who have tried all cases, any congressional person that has not called for the militia, any executive who has failed to execute the laws and actually calling for the Congress to give me the militia to put on that border and not calling for the militia to actually round up all these invaders, they're all complacent and they're all guilty. They all have blood on their hands. It's that simple. And the petition we're producing this weekend will give you this. Now, the insurrection. Interesting, but we need to go through this because, as I've told you, Congress and our government in so many different ways, at so many different levels, are in an outright insurrection or rebellion against the Constitution. So let's go through the facts. Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 14 states, the Congress shall have power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Then we go through the 14th Amendment, Section 3, which we've kind of said before, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of the state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, but Congress may, by vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. So here's the plain language. What I just told you, that was a citation, word for word, verbatim, of what Section 3 states. This is the plain language in today's speak. No person shall be a public servant who shall have previously taken an oath as a public servant to support the Constitution, who then engaged in insurrection or rebellion activity against the Constitution, or given aid or comfort to the enemy of the Constitution. If so, they are immediately removed and banned for life from public service, but Congress may, by vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. Now, I have to actually include in this, because I didn't include this, engaged in violating. And so when I say this, violating, there we go, in violating the Constitution, that actually extends this a little bit further so that we understand that if you're not following the Constitution, like this invasion, you're not actually executing and repelling this invasion, and so you're not following it, then that in itself is a violation, and that in itself is an insurrection or rebellion against the Constitution. People need to start understanding they have a duty and a responsibility to execute this Constitution as designed. When problems arise that it identifies, there is a very specific act that they need to do, and we got to hold them accountable for it. And folks, because we're not holding them accountable, that's the problem. Now, our nation was built upon principles of civility. and uncivil behavior was not tolerated, which is why public protests were and are against the law in every state, in every municipality in this union. You just can't go out and block, you know, the sidewalks. You can't go out and block the streets. You can't go out and start protesting, or you can get arrested. And that's been proven. Now, if you actually have, you know, some radical leftist communist garb on today, then you're safe to go out there, you know, as long as it's a communist garb. If you're a leftist Nazi, then, you know, okay, they'll try to label lynch you as a conservative constitutionalist. But folks, let's be clear. The Nazis and the communists are on the same side. They're in the same category as far as, you know, left and right. They are extreme leftists. I mean, the Nazis were the socialists that actually, you know, it's a statist government. Why would they think that it is a liberty government, an individual free capitalism? It has nothing to do with the right. How did it ever get over to the right? So, and some people say that some people, when they go so far to the right, they actually turn, you know, into a Nazi. That's not true. Because when you actually go so far to the right, and this is why we go through the scale of liberty before we start the ratification debates. When you go to the, you know, the extreme end of the scale of liberty, which is to me the extreme right, which is the extreme truth, that means that you believe that nobody can be compelled, nobody can be forced, that everybody has to make their own decisions, that they all need to be educated, but you can't compel them that. You try to offer them and you try to help them and you try to do everything you can in nurturing them so that they can make the best decision for themselves. But that's what you believe. That's the extreme side of that, that you'll even suffer the punches and suffer the slings and arrows, as they would say. But my friends, you know, anybody that starts going down that we have to compel, we have to start controlling, we have to, that is a statist view, that is an evil view when you have to compel people. And so Nazis are compellers. They go equally down that left track, just like communists. They're statists and they're totalitarians. So anyway, when we look at the civility that was established and demanded within this system, the fact that we have lost sight of the First Amendment petition in holding government accountable, there is a reason for this. It is because government has done everything they can so that you can't watch them. You can't hold them accountable because they've got a dirty job to do in destroying this Constitution and this Constitutional Republic. And so that is the label that they need to be wearing, and we need to be calling them out and dragging them out of office. This is why these First Amendment petitions are so useful. You know, when they've actually gone down this path of obscuring the truth on this stuff and actually got us using things that are actually illegal instead of actually what's in the Constitution, that should be a huge hint to you folks that that's how powerful this thing is. Okay? So America's first insurrection, in placing context to protest, the first insurrection was the Whiskey Rebellion. And so you understand this. This was a protest, not a petition. In other words, they didn't go and challenge the veracity because it was already done. There were protests, or I should say, there were petitions for the redress of grievances. And everybody looked at it and goes, it's right there in the Constitution. The federal government has the ability to assess taxes. And this is an excise tax. We're going to wrap this up in Monday's show. But what we're doing is we're moving forward. The next thing we're going to cover is the 17th Amendment. Then we're going to get into religious tests. And then we're going to actually cover this concept of make no law. Because it says that in the Constitution. And they keep on making law. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic. And we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.